episode of the Front Page Football Podcast. Matt Olson joins me tonight, and we have just watched the longest game in Australia Cup final rounds history. I've not done my research on that, but it has got to be right up there, surely. And the Wellington Phoenix were the victors in the end against Perth Glory at its Kingsway Reserve. The name of the ground, or is it?
It's been renamed Olympic Stadium for the purposes of you know, hosting a professional game, right. And obviously hosting Melbourne Victory next week, and also with all the extra stands and things that have been put up here. So again, the government just doing what they do and investing really heavily in sport. Sorry, there's been no formal introduction, and again, I know this is not a visual podcast, but it's raining sideways.
That's what I was about to say. So it's important to mention the ground because Matt is actually there. We are recording the pod with Matt. At Olympic Stadium, I have had to suffer from the comforts of my home during this game. Matt has suffered at the ground.
I am three chairs down on this table, and there are drops hitting my hand. That is how sideways this rain is going right now.
I think I'm wondering if WA, if you guys are getting our rain here from SA, because. I don't know if you know, but yesterday, so it's Sunday night. Yesterday on Saturday, it just rained nonstop here in Adelaide, actually on Friday, and then yesterday it kept going. So was like yesterday in WA all good, and then you just got it today? I'm wondering.
Honestly, I'm trying to connect the dots here. Yes, but I don't know how precipitation patterns work. Sorry for the Bureau of Meteorology comments here. We might have to give a call to Neil Bennett, who works alongside me, works with Beyond 90 in the women's football, because he did work for the BOM, and he would probably be able to tell us. But I think the precipitation, does it not go eastward and not westward?
I've got absolutely no idea, man. You're asking the wrong person. All right. So that's enough of the weird small talk. Let's talk about the game. So this game started... at 4:30 where I am, let's work on Eastern time. So 5 o'clock Eastern time. The funniest thing about this is, you know how Wellington fans, whenever Wellington play in Perth and they're like, okay, awesome. No, like not awesome. The game starts at like 9:30 here in Wellington. No, starts at like 12 at midnight or 11:30 in Wellington. So I'm not going to bed till like 2 a.m. And then like today, they're like, oh, fantastic. This game starts at like 7 where we are. It's going to be I'm going to be able to go to bed at like 10. No worries. I've got work in the morning. It's a Monday, etc. And then like you're halfway through and they're probably thinking, am I actually going to be going to bed at midnight? What is happening? So there was that. But in the end, we got there. And the Phoenix prevailed. So I'm just going to throw to you because, listen, from a results standpoint, we really can't look into anything from the Australia Cup, I think. I mean, Glory are a great example of that last season. So what were your – but we can look at things like, I guess, how the teams have played, systems, personnel, selection. So what have you read into, I guess, from both sides? Any takeaways?
I think there's probably something on the more positive side. I'd say where this is actually a better calm and well measured defensive effort from Perth that we I don't think we've seen as many glimpses of. And so I think immediately what really spoke out to me was that they were playing defensively really well. And when you look at the goal that was conceded, Ollie's actually made a really, really good save, but he's just had the biggest brain fart in not being able to actually clear. Well, he's not had the wherewithal to actually clear the ball outwards. He's actually palmed it straight into the path I'm not going to remember who finished it off.
Lucas Kelly-Hill.
Kelly-Hill, thank you. And, I don't know what your thoughts were on that, but outside of one or two lapses here or there, I actually thought Perth were defensively very solid. I would actually say the biggest thing into this, and I did say this in our group chat earlier, the game is just really missing someone in that midfield that can dictate play a bit better, be more confident on the ball. That's Perth's problem because all of their options going forward were direct. They were balls out from the back, and it's like, we can't be doing this shit again. Come on. if the defense is there to complement and keep everything steady, that's all good. But they need someone in that anchor in midfield. And something that was pointed out to me by Neil Sherman from 5S Perth, that it really rings in our minds of this. I know they've got the Milan game in you know, 3 or 4 days, but where's Luke Amos? Where's Nick Bennington? Like, why are these guys actually out? Are they just rested? Like it doesn't.
Okay, really, so doesn't we're gonna we're talking about the game now. We're probably gonna have like a little conversation in 10 minutes about if Perth are actually gonna have their best 11 ready by round one. Now that's not till mid October, so they've got just under 3 months to get that happening. But yeah,
this is. I need to move even further down this table. Sorry,
Matt is currently listening on the podcast. Matt is currently moving at Olympic Stadium.
Yeah,
it's hilarious how we're talking about this like it's live, but people are going to listen to this on a Monday morning / Monday afternoon, Monday evening. So there's that. But the interesting thing about this game was actually seeing Perth have the ball for. Like a vast majority of this game, they ended up with 64% possession. Just hang on, Matt, because then you also remember, oh, wait, they're playing Wellington, who are actually allergic to keeping the ball. So there's that. Wellington played a different system from what it looked like to me, from what they did for most of the last season. They played a 3-4-3, which is a bit different. And they also, when they were in possession, I thought they were far more actually adventurous in getting the wingbacks forward in Juan Locke and Kelly Hill. Juan Locke, by the way, I think I'm saying his name right, actually looked pretty solid today. I thought he looked all right. I think he was, if I'm not mistaken, I think he might have been like the reserves captain at the Phoenix for a while there, and they've given him a scholarship probably. So, yeah, no, he looked pretty solid. Perth have ended up with like over 300 more or almost 300 more passes completed than Wellington in the 120 minutes. Yep. So I actually thought, you were talking about an anchor in midfield. I actually thought, and I loved Timmins last year at the Jets, last season, in the second half of the season in particular. And I thought like he was pretty good today. Like I thought that was kind of the Timmins that we saw at the Jets. So he could be that guy. It's actually to your discussion, to your point around Amos and Pennington. So Gamulka, I don't think, is in the best 11 for Perth. And I think last year was not great. And I think it's probably between Amos, Pennington, and Timmins. So two of those three, if we're thinking about 3 months' time, which is still, like, there's still so much to be done before then. But, yeah, I just thought when you mentioned that, to say that. And before I throw it back to you, just kind of, so Taggart comes on. We were texting through the game. Taggart does nothing. Like, literally, I don't think he touched the ball. I have to go and have a look. And then, like, just the ball gets cleared from a corner. Finn Conchi. I have got you in my sights, man, because this was destined for a comfortable Phoenix 1-0. Okay, like Perth huffed and puffed, but Wellington in the end are going to win 1-0. And then if you watch the replay of the goal closely, Finn Conchi, he's marking Taggart, and then the ball gets cleared, and then he's thinking, okay, awesome. Like, we're going to push up the field, no problem. And then Gamulka just stabs a left foot at it, like the worst effort ever. I don't know what that was. But, I mean, that's Adam Taggart in a nutshell. That's just the type of goal that he scores. He's right time, right place, good finish, and we're going extra time. And then we had a lightning strike, surprisingly, though, hey, the Olympic Stadium Lightning Strike beat the Chelsea Benfica Club World Cup Lightning Strike by a good distance. So, you know, well done, yeah, Matt.
I mean, I have no idea how it came across on stream, but there was quite a visible flash. And the funniest thing was seeing the match commissioner Alex Gavaskis just shit himself and bolt down the stairs in the grandstand to run out and wave and go, no.
The match commissioners with Lightning are like, they're they're on edge, and it's like, as soon as you see one, it's just like, bang, like, they're up.
Exactly. Exactly. I do want to talk a little bit more about just the game more broadly, because I think Luke Brooks-Smith was probably the standout player tonight.
Yes,
but also, I also just wanted to say, in terms of ball-playing players and players that were good on their feet, I think Sam Sutton actually for me, was very, very good tonight. And I think he's someone that clearly you could see his heart and his passion. You could see, you know, even when he came out, he was the first signing of the offseason, and he had a lot of very complimentary things to say about Perth, you know. But clearly a lot of people here, they come for, you know, that aura of just this famous NSL club. But I think a lot of people do really dig into the lifestyle here and really like Western Australia as a place. And I think Sam, he'll really, really become something of a revelation, I hope, finally being out of the shack, or not the shackles, that's probably a really good way to put it, but the demeanour of the way that a lot of Phoenix football have been played. And this is a bit more kind of, you've got that freedom to go. It's not dependent on other factors being mostly on the back foot. If that team's in possession more and you're one of those wider players to create a bit more of a spark, I think Sam will really revel under that. Do you know what I mean? So I'm really looking forward to it. But again, you mentioned Loke for Phoenix, Luke Brooks-Smith. I thought, you know, Ishige was good when he had his chances and kept the team dangerous when they needed to be. You know, Olawanyemi had his moments in goal as well. I don't really want to fault a lot of the way either team played tonight, which I think is really important because we've had this famous clash in sideways rain at an NPL venue. And like, it's good. But I also, like, I would actually go so far as to say what you're talking about with form. I'd say both of these clubs can be pretty happy with the way they played out. Obviously, Glory go home pissed off because, you know, they've played for 4 hours and not really, come away with something. But
do you know if the Trillage came away from this and went, hey, that's going to help our conditioning pre-season since that became, you know, like the most talked about thing like round 17 last season. So anyway.
Look, I think that's important. But then also, like, I would, a chair's just whacked the table and everyone's kind of left the grandstand area, so I'm getting a little bit scared. That's all right.
Matt's going to get locked in anyway.
No. They've got this AC Milan game to come up, and I just wonder, is there actually like a bigger financial incentive in that with the government and watching and all those eyes on the game as opposed to a cup game where, yeah, you can progress and make a bit of money, but to what extent, like, where does the money, you know, actually factor into that? I can't imagine the Han Australia Cup is a very lucrative tournament in that respect. So I think when you talk about these guys, when I've kind of mentioned these guys that are missing, I just wonder if Village has actually been told, hey, can you not risk injury, you know, because we really want to put everything right for AC Milan. So we'll see how that goes.
Yeah. So I agree with you, Brooks-Smith. I felt, up until he came off, was the most impactful player on the pitch for sure. And he is, like, he looks like a player that has had a season of A-League football under his belt. And if you compare him and Sloan Rodriguez, you can see that there's like a 1 year pro difference between them just watching that game today. And he is so strong on the ball as well. When he drives inside, you can see like Timmins and Labib, they're on the goal actually, that when he drove inside and like they were almost timid to actually get near him out of fear of giving away a foul on the edge of the area, and then a really good effort. I thought Sale could have got a lot more purchase on the save, but you know, it is Ollie Sale, and you know, we've seen this pretty regularly from him, but look, it wasn't an egregious keeper error by any means. Yeah, so Juan Locke, we mentioned, he actually had an 87% pass accuracy. He had from like 26 completed passes. All his statistical stuff, ground jewels, 50% one, like pretty good. Sutton, you mentioned. So Sutton, like last year, I was really disappointed by. And actually when Perth signed him, I was kind of like, you know, it's not really a guy that I've ever been too excited about. But he does this thing a lot where he'll just get the ball down the left-hand side and he'll just kind of drive forward with it and he'll kind of make up his mind as he's driving as to what to do. And in the end, it kind of amounts to nothing. Tonight, he wasn't really doing that as much, maybe more in the first half. But he had, Matt, this is stunning. Sutton had 24 crosses tonight over the 120 minutes, which is kind of like an absurd number. He actually had 8 of them that were accurate. So a third of his crosses were accurate, which is pretty good from that number of deliveries. So now he was decent, but weird decision by Chiefy to take off Brooks-Smith. I felt when he did, Phoenix went into their shell. Glory got on top a bit more. Then Zrilic made those changes. And then, weirdly, after Target equalised, I don't know what you thought, but after Target equalised, I thought Phoenix were going to nick it at the end. Like, they had, like, three or four really good chances right at the end of the game. And it's just like, this feels like a typical Zrilic Perth thing to just, like, work hard for the equaliser and then give away a winner. But in the end, we went to a lightning strike postponement, and then we went to extra time.
I think that's honestly been a very natural characteristic of both of these teams, is that you do end up obviously having two teams that, because of the nature with which they play, you know, Corey, they really kind of need their moments in an attacking sense to be able to threaten, you know, and create their chances. Because of that lack of being able to drive the ball consistently, mixed in with the Phoenix team that are on edge because of how they are so geared defensively as well. And so the combination of that, you know, in a game that's going to go the distance, in a game where there's been a dramatic draw, I think you're naturally going to get two teams that are on edge and then two teams that are really playing for those fickle moments to be able to decide to, you know, define the fixture. And I think it's no coincidence here that we've seen them go the distance and seen them play out this really, really long, intense fixture. I think anything could have happened tonight. And I think we got a very accurate portrayal of both teams really righting their wrongs as well. I think, again, your point on Sutton, that statistic really kind of speaks out about his ability to not only control the ball, but actually to be a bit of that spark. I just wish that, you know, instead of that dynamism out wide, I do wish and I think that what I've been told is that, you know, as far as a foreign signing is concerned, that's immediately what they'll look for. They'll look for that fluidity, but they'll look through it through the middle of the park as well, because that's really, well, I think it's obvious that that's what they're missing. And look, you know, you don't want to get overexcited and start talking about, you know, maybe this is finally it for Perth. But I do wonder if their years of mediocrity can come at the end of the sign of a foreign signing that really actually is even half the way good. I mean, you know, we could be talking about, you know, just a bit of that spark they had under Ruben at Macedonia Park. And to think that was already 3 years ago is kind of mind-boggling. I do think that both sides did play their strengths really, really well, and I'm actually looking forward to seeing that progression play out, because, again, I think the signs are a lot more positive to me.
Like, that's how dire this five-year period has been for Perth, that we're reminiscing on the Ruben Sakovic coach Perth glory. Anyway, but I get your point in the context, but it's just funny, given how old mate Ruben went last year. Anyway, first Brian Kautak thoughts? Pleased? Oh, I thought he was good.
I think for the brief period that he had, I think that Kautak and a lot of the Vanuatu and support that he's already very clearly brought into the club. He was very, very good. But I do just wonder if, you know, was he rested for AC Milan? Like, his reason for not starting to me probably suggests that there's still probably a bit of a worry with the fitness on someone of that age. And you know, especially considering, like, his main point is his physicality, very big, big, stocky bloke, someone that can really have a go at it. And I do wonder if we're capable of seeing that for 90 minutes a season. It's all dependent on a lot of things. And I know we can't overreact over one game, but I thought, again, he's played the role very, very well tonight. And I think it's a sign of the fact that defensively things are slowly changing for Perth. But someone like Brian can be brought in, have a lot of that sort of grit for the club. And he did. He played very, very well. But again, I don't think either side put too many feet wrong. You know, I think both sides actually really played to their strengths tonight. And you can tell just because of that transition from sort of out the back with those sort of figures like Kautak being a bit sturdy, Sutton, you know, really playing that ball well. I think it's telling that has at least got a spark in where this team's totaled, you know, 16, 17 shots in a game. Because I know they're playing a defensively geared Phoenix side. When did Glory do that last season? You know, when did Glory put up those kinds of numbers last season? They sort of didn't, right? So it's a positive sign, but it's very opponent dependent as well. So I think, yeah, Kautak's done well, but it's literally like, what, like a 60-minute cameo, whatever it was. So you can't exaggerate, but it's a good sign.
Or Kautak. Anyway,
Kautak Socceroos. Kautak.
Yes. Socceroos.
Soleimani, who I feel like we should mention.
Yeah, yeah, no. So
Soleimani's name was also spot wrong.
Yes. Yes, it was spelled Suleiman, I think.
Or something like that.
Yes.
There you go.
I believe so. I actually wanted to talk about him and Nathaniel Blair because, like, can Zrilic not play that striking pairing together, like, again, if possible? It was kind of gross, I have to be honest. You've got one guy. Yeah. Listen, they're both young players. I'm actually not even, like, you know, like trying to hammer them as players. It's more like you've got one guy who's basically a target man in Nathaniel Blair, and the ball's just being pumped into him like constantly. Hey, hey, Nathaniel, can you bring down this like ridiculous 40-yard pass against, you know, these three Wellington defenders? But then also you've got Suleimani, who, like, I'm struggling to see like what type of striker he is, like whether he is more of a running behind guy. Is he more of a come towards the ball guy? Is he holding the ball up? Like, I'm still trying to work out exactly what his best attributes are. But I just thought as a pairing that really didn't work. And I guess maybe Taggart was not up to speed. Like, could Bagaria have started maybe instead, just to have like that sort of willing runner in behind? Like, that was interesting. And then the other point was, so Joel Anasmo, who, like, it was only today that I realized that he actually was back from his loan. For some reason in my head, I thought it was like he was gone till mid-season. But that was like basically just a three-month like business venture for Perth, essentially.
Yes.
Like,
and apparently at the local NPL level, he was getting a lot of stick for it as well. People saying, "Oh, how did your expensive trip to Korea go?" So
wow.
But look, I don't.
I would have replied and said, "Hey, at least I got overseas. at least I got some money out of it." Anyway. You're saying?
That was sort of the end of the
call. I was saying the Anasmo, like, I thought was pretty sort of meh today, but then he also got hooked at halftime, which I was like a little bit. So basically you loan this guy out for 3 months just to make some money. You bring him back for this game. Well, like, you bring him back for the season. You're thinking, like, Anasmo, I thought when he played last year was really, really good. He was a massive spark off the bench. And then you bring him back and it's like in the first game you drag him after 45 minutes. Like, okay, that's interesting. I'm sure Anasmo was pretty happy with that. Listen, I'm sure it's nothing, but maybe it's conditioning. Who knows? But I just thought that was a little bit odd. And
if I could continue though, the issue with someone like Anasmo is he's very clearly you know, I come back to Nathaniel Blair, right? It was on this exact stage 12 months ago that we had the famous Nathaniel Blair moment against Melbourne City. And, like, that was – sorry for the impression. That was
– I love how you remember the commentary as if it's, like, some iconic moment and it's, like – and it's, like, they got the wooden spoon. They followed that with a wooden spoon. Anyway.
Hold on. But you realise that really was a moment for us where – The winter was going so well, we thought there was a platform, you know? And I come back to tonight where I think you just he's showing signs, and that's good, but he's very clearly going to get overrun over a 26, 27-round season. And I'd look at Anasmo the same way. These talents, yeah, they're good, and they're probably some of the best that WA has, but are they going to be able to play a full 27 rounds of A-League football? Like, they're probably not.
They need
more depth.
Yeah. No, they need – so my overriding – and so because we're talking about, like, the – during the game, like, the lolly thing that didn't happen, which was just, like
–
like, there's a whole Sydney conversation to that, which is really interesting, where he's, like, what, 6 months ago he was probably saying, I love Sydney, it's so great to live here, and then all of a sudden it's like, yeah, I'd rather go to Perth. It's like, okay. And then – but also there's – you're watching Perth today and you're like, okay, so you're still relying on Taggart to produce a goal, right? Like, you need another goal scorer. Like, whether that's going to come through a foreign player, whether one of these guys internally is going to step up, like, or whether they're going to pick up someone
I think, though, I, I think though you would find an alternate route to goal if you had better movement, because like what's going on with Taggart is there's a lot of those balls out from the back or you know players that are good on their feet, even like someone like Labib, who's obviously he was previously playing in defensive positions, but he's played that higher line. He's played in the right wing position earlier today, and that's by design because you want someone with a bit more of that fluidity who can be good on the ball.
Has he played
in the middle of the park?
Has he played on the wing before?
Yes, he actually does. Yeah.
Okay.
He has actually been utilized at MPL level quite a lot. Yeah. No, that's fine. That's fine. I wouldn't expect you to understood that. I mean, I'm someone that barely follows the MPL, and I've had to kind of do a double take and ask some of the other guys about it as well. So, I think the issue is actually more of that movement in the middle of the park. I'll come back to it, and I'll probably, over the course of the season, of me both writing pieces and doing this on the podcast, I will probably say this touching about 500 or 600 times between now and round 27. Like, let's just be honest. Between now and fucking April, I will be saying this a lot. It's the movement of the ball that then supplies Taggart that could bring out ability in someone like Nathaniel Blair. You know, get a key midfield signing. Get a key midfield signing. And I'll tell you what, we're not asking for the next Diego Castro, just someone who's even remotely serviceable and the team can tick. That's probably my biggest takeaway from tonight. And of course, you know, from the Phoenix perspective, they're still doing their pragmatic football really, really well. Like I was actually quite impressed to see that obviously there's something there that's still obviously working really well and won't be too heavily exposed at A-League level. So I think Phoenix can be happy.
Well, I thought, so on to Wellington. It was weird because you look, after the game, you think, well, they only had 36% of the ball. Like, was it really that much different to what we've watched last year? But I don't know what it was. Just watching them, maybe it's because some of the individual players just looked a little bit better. And I think that's also, like, Wellington, I'm going to give Ben Homer credit. He made this link in the commentary. But Wellington have got this sort of, they've actually got an opportunity, basically like Western United did last season, where the year before, all those Western United youngsters played in a team that was losing a lot. And didn't do well and underachieved, but just had a bad season. And then Wellington have kind of done a similar thing last season where they didn't replace really any of the losses they had from the season before. They just kind of blooded more of their young players. And now we're going to see whether those young players, it was actually worth it, that experiment, or whether, you know, it's actually just going to be more of the same. And I actually think you looked at Isaac Hughes looked, besides that one like almost catastrophic moment towards the end with Oluwayemi, he looked a little bit more comfortable on the ball. Sheridan I've always kind of actually liked. I just think he gets kind of stuffed around with his position a little bit. Then you've got Brooke Smith, you mentioned, who looked like a fully fledged A-League player, to be honest, today. So that's an interesting thing to note with them. And Chiefy, listen, as we all know, I'm one of the bigger Chiefy fans going around, but he's done the thing for the second preseason in a row where he's promising, like, you know, a more entertaining team, you know, sort of thing. We're going to play a little bit different. And it's like, again, I've got to believe it when I see it, you know, like, and what I mean by that is I need to see Wellington be capable against certain opposition, particularly the opposition that's around them, of actually being capable of, when they're on top, being ruthless, being able to keep the ball for longer periods and actually look like a team that has some sort of a stable attacking identity, you know? And that's kind of my main gripe with them. Any other sort of thoughts with Wellington?
I think so as long as a lot of those younger guys, similar enough to the dynamic I was saying with Perth, so as long as those younger guys can actually keep up the wear on their bodies to play that full 27-round season, they're a team that can comfortably be in the top six. You never really want to write them out because the way they play is just enough to always get under your skin a little bit, and that is the aura that Chiefy Ball provides. So, you know, if there is extra time for the squad...
Along with the general aura that Chiefy provides,
the whole dynamic will play out.
So,
Yes, 100%. I've actually just seen him walk down the hall, but it's pretty funny. Yes. I think I've kind of actually said all I need to say.
That's my fault. I totally pushed off the train of thought. But no, I was going to actually mention, so the guys who didn't play today, so for Perth, you had Pennington.
Yeah.
You had, is Liz Olajski still at Perth? Yes?
I believe so. It's not a definitive yes.
Okay, then you've got Luke Amos, of course. Michella's still on the books, I believe. Did he leave?
I think he might have only signed for like half a year.
Yeah, I'm going to have to check this one. But anyway, on the Wellington side, the main one, of course, was Ezra, the new Nigerian striker they brought in. There's guys missing, which we've got to obviously make sure when we talk about this. So I'm just thinking about Wellington. And Wellington, they've got business
as well. The thing is, it's Australasian football at its core. Like, signings just do go missing. They do become anonymous. And I think that we do have probably a bit of an issue with the Cup as a product where I don't think there's not enough love into it to actually want to put a better team out. But especially when you're Glory, like I come back to it, if there is a financial incentive to actually take the AC Milan game more seriously, it's all about the bottom line. And if you're Lazaridis, if you're Pagrella, you know, if you're all the powers that be, you kind of want to go out there and really care. I mean, some of the other journalists made a comment to me today about, like, you know, what's going to happen if they freaking rock up with, like, Trent Osler, who, like, is okay on his
feet. I like Trent Osler.
Does not have a finished product. He's like a very, very loyal servant of the club. He's literally been with the club since like 2017.
Yeah.
So like there's that side of it. But I'm just saying, like, he's very obviously going to get quite heavily exposed by some of those AC Milan players going at, you know, 20-50%, right? I would hope someone like Luke Amos is sitting there cooking to like announce his name to the fucking world against AC Milan in you know, 3 days' time. But let me put it that way. I just feel like there would have to be some sort of story to that. Because I just don't get it. Like, especially Amos is someone that I do have a lot of hope and faith in to actually, like, if the team can show that semblance and be a little bit better. Amos is the kind of name I want to break out and you know, even if he ends up in a Victory or Sydney FC jersey or whatever it is, like it's a consulting go for some of our better players at a time, I want to see that from him. And I think the AC Milan game would be a good platform for that. Unless if there's underlying fitness issues or if, you know, the elephant in the room, the medical staff just can't keep the players fit, like so often happens in Perth, then, you know, the conversation actually turns on Ted, and I think all of us have a right to be angry. But what we'll have to see in that lead-up. I mean, of course, as far as all the media from the game is concerned, of course, it's all about AC Milan. It's all about that potential deal. And I didn't mean to go this far as well. And again, it's not the topic of the podcast at all. But apparently the Serie A fixture during the Winter Olympics is at the mercy of UEFA, and UEFA are not being very nice to the WA government as of yet. So it's starting to kind of tip from it's happening to it's up in the air. So that's going to be the talking point going into this game. Like, it's all about off-field stuff. It's all about money and what's lucrative. And so I reflect on that at a time like this where I think, okay, I can understand maybe not putting the best players out there, but we'll see.
Is that a Matt Olsen exclusive?
It's just, you know, I don't want to be like, oh, I broke the news, but it's just what I've heard. So again, I don't actually do the journalism part here, mate. It's not what I signed up for.
Front page, not really journalism football, basically. Anyway.
That's it. Yeah, that is actually our name.
Kind of is. That's the subtext. The Perth guys missing today. So Birigidi, of course. I believe Lisolaiski is injured at the moment because he's still contracted at the end of next season. So no problem there. You've got Pennington, who I think might be actually injured at the moment, Matt. So maybe you could kind of follow up with that. Okay. Luke Amos, Will Freeney, of course, recently signed a new 2-year deal. Lockie Wales, of course, he was missing today. And even someone like Sebastian Despotowski, who they gave minutes towards the end of last season, stumbled in the NPL, so maybe you could count him in that. And then Wellington, you've got Albie Kelly-Heald, I think he's still got that shoulder injury. Corbin Piper, of course, Tim Payne, Alex Rufer. Like, so, you know, Also, Carlo Amianto, of course, just signed. So, like, yeah, they've had some sort of guys who are probably going to be starters missing today as well. So, we've got to take that with a grain of salt. Okay, are we? You finished with your Perth Wellington analysis? I think we've covered.
Yes, I am, and of course, I do have that Milan game to look forward to. So that's where a lot of my focus will shift. But let's not forget my birthday, the 29th of July, because I am in the belly of the beast here at Olympic Kingsway Football Club. And I don't know if you've just seen that. That is the round of 32 and round of 16 banners that the club has won in this competition. So I really just wanted to, because I know you want to talk championship. Let's talk
awkward.
About
the fact Perth Glory are leaving the stadium, and that round of 16 qualifier banner is still there, but it's there for Kingsway on Tuesday. They can take it. Yeah. Okay, that's
well. It's the one that they won last winter, mate.
Who?
Kingsway, you bloody idiot! It's their banner from last.
Oh my god! Yeah, right. Thanks for calling me an idiot on my own podcast. Excellent. Anyway, so have we wrapped a bow on this? Our analysis of the game is turning into the game itself. It's never ending. Far out.
All right. Okay. Sorry. That got a little bit off hand. But I was applying a segue to the championship because this club had a massive win last Friday night.
Yeah.
To the point where they could very well be playing in that competition, but for the ever stubborn and the ever successful Matthew Sparrow's Bayswater City. So I'm really looking forward to that because of the ability of one of these two clubs firing on all cylinders to be able to play in a national competition that we'll get a taste of. On my birthday again, as Kingsway plays Melbourne Victory. So the WA perspective here is I'm looking at these two teams booking, being like, I can't wait to see them go to Wodonga Park and have that privilege of taking on Sydney United. And then, you know, the tweet comes out and it's worrying signs, but is it just soccer Twitter shenanigans?
Okay, so let's, Australia, so now, you know? Now we've officially segued into 5 to 10 minutes of
yep.
NSD talk. So tweet comes out, report about that basically the second division is going to, like, you know, the whole thing is going to fold after 2 years. Then today, Football Australia come out and say that simply the third request for proposal phase is concluded, and they've basically just found no further foundation clubs. We're sticking with the eight as of now, and I'll just kind of read some of what that statement had. So this third NST RFP process was expanded to target clubs outside of the initial expression of interest process, and predominantly from underrepresented states and territories. So that's interesting to start off with. Basically, it kind of tells me that during that process, it was about let's try and make this not New South Wales and Victorian centric. So, hey, any clubs in Queensland, clubs in South Australia, clubs in even WA, where Matt is, like, is there anyone there who has the ability to become compliant with the standards that are required to be a part, a foundation member of this full home and away league? That's what that kind of told me there. And then they also said, though, which I think, you know, people, read full statements, please. Encouraged with the prospect that additional clubs may be in a stronger position to join in the future. So, in other words, as what usually happens in anything to do with, like, the second division, Socceroos, A-League finances, like, there's basically like a handful of topics where this is going to happen based on anything, where one report comes out, everyone takes it as gospel, everyone loses their minds, like it's the end of the world. And by the way, I'm not necessarily saying that report is like, it is kind of wrong in the sense that, you know, the statement today kind of confirmed that, no, this thing is still going ahead in some capacity. It could be right in the sense that, you know, we might not ever see a home and away league for the national second division. Like, that's still very much in play here as an outcome. But I think where we're heading right now is we're probably going to see 4 or 5 years of this postseason tournament, essentially, before we see any home and away league movement. And I think that's going to be hard for some people to hear, but I just think that's a reality. If you've got, like, basically this whole process to me, before I throw to you, Matt, is it's kind of struck me as Football Australia is setting a bar up here when it comes to being compliant financially, from a facility standpoint, whatever, all the key aspects you need to basically be a professional club. And what they're saying to these clubs is, if you want to compete at this level, you need to be at this level in everything, right? Now, I understand the irony in saying that when we look at maybe some of the operations of a few A-League clubs at the moment and what they're doing, like, is that really at the level? And that's the argument of the clubs that are maybe disappointed in this not being a full home and away league yet. But at the end of the day, someone's either going to meet somewhere. So either Football Australia are going to keep their standards and more clubs need to be able to meet that for this to be full home and away, or Football Australia are going to have to lower their standards slightly. But then if they do that, as we know, that's going to mean that this league is going to be a little bit more precarious and on a little bit more shaky ground than what was the initial intention, which for me seems to be the intention is we're not doing this until we are fully confident this is going to be strong and actually have a strong foundation. Because that's actually going to be even worse for your South Melbournes, your Prestons, your et cetera, if we start this on the wrong footing, because it's just going to be downhill from there. So anyway, Matt, you take it away. I've given my little 2 cents.
Yeah, I just feel like there's almost like a bit of a safety lock on, where like we're that terrified of things going wrong and the game being put in a bad light that'll send us back years, you know, because the media will scathe on it any chance they get. It does feel like that. And so Football Australia just want to protect their own interests as much as they can, you know. I hate this because I'm such a realist and I'm always so sympathetic of conversations about this, about, you know, the expansion of the game and of the ability to have a competition that you know, supports the old sort of NSL clubs getting back to a bit of form of glory. Like, I think the championship, it has a place, but we just got to do it in the most real and respectful way that we can. And so looking after that bottom line so freaking much to the point where we want to actually make something that realistically might happen, you know, close it off and say it's not going to happen at all. That I'm sympathetic of that because I understand it comes from a good place. But then I look at you know, some of what goes on in these NPL leagues that's really, really like the envy of certain parts of Australian football culture and something that I want on a more national scale. I mean, some of these games in NPL Vic, I wish they were more accessible. I wish I could watch them the same way that I do watch A-League games on Paramount Plus. Yep. You know, I want a piece of that pie to be able to take in at a professional level. But I don't know. It comes down to me that, you know, excuse a bit of a cringy pun, but we don't want own goals and red cards in this scenario, you know. And I just, of course, the people at the very top are going to have a protective interest. And I would go back on the statement though, like, just the way that everyone's kind of had that knee jerk reaction to it, where it's just like, oh, of course this happened, you know, of course the championship's going down, of course, you know, no one normal day of Australian football and all those jokes. And I mean, that for me is annoying, because it completely deteriorates and eliminates from like the actual just substantive conversation that people need to have about this as a topic.
Yeah, exactly.
And this is
stuff I've written really about recently. It's It's a joke, honestly, to be honest.
It reminds me of, you know, you remember when Ange Postecoglou had that whole comment about football cringe and how, you know, everyone's universal reaction to Massimo Luongo getting a Ballon d'Or nomination for being the star player of the Asian Cup in 2015 like, is this some sort of piss take? Like, yeah, like, what's he doing there? Like, let's have a joke about that. And I mean, if a championship comes out half-baked, people aren't going to be like, oh, how good is this format? How good is it seeing some of these underdog sides, like, you know, a plucky South Australian side? I'm sorry, I don't know who's at the top of your league at the moment. Or, you know,
Metro,
you know,
Stars, this Kingsway side with all these veterans
and players. Okay. There you go. So, I mean, imagine Metro Stars, you know, v Kingsway. And then, you know, those two clubs going out to face Sydney United. And I'm sorry, the other team in the group is beyond me at the moment. But that group, you know, I've obviously got my eye on it for very obvious reasons. But it's just kind of the thing where, like, we would deteriorate that, what? Because it's not a home and away season. People aren't going to be like, no, I won't tune in. And it's just like, oh, I'm sorry, but this is not how the real world fucking works, you know? And I think people are not going to support a half-baked league, but a half-baked league, if it's all we can conjure up, let's try and get some that sense of realism installed into people in any way that we can. Now, it does piss me off. It really upsets me. But I also think that, again, the knee-jerk reaction to the tweet itself, this tweet that actually ended up being, you know, not entirely factual as well, that gets way more commentary than the actual fucking statement the FA put out as well. Yeah, it's just like one of those things where people almost have it. It's like they're sniffer dogs or something. They want to seize out the big negative headline so they can sit there and have a laugh and have a gander and talk about how much of a joke Australian football is. And it's like, you're our fucking community. You're our backbone. Like, let's actually speak up for our authorities a bit more than be in a position where we got to, you know, it's frustrating for sure.
There's not much I can add to that. Every single word that Matt said there is absolutely spot on. It's very simple. You can't sit there and talk about, how do we not have promotion relegation? This is so easy. Just introduce it. And then not be on board or not have an understanding of actually what goes into making that happen and that there is a long-term process that needs to happen here. There's too many stakeholders. You can't just flick the switch and get this going straight away. And the sooner people accept that, the more actual substantive good discourse we're going to have around the topic, like I hope me and Matt have just had for the last 10 minutes. And on that note, Matthew, I think that'll conclude our little mini 45-minute pod. In the end, I do believe it was it wasn't postponed too much, unlike what we saw at Olympic Stadium tonight. So I think I got to the point relatively quickly on a lot of this. So any parting thoughts?
No, it is a pleasure talking to you. And of course, the week of football. You know how Channel 10 have that winter festival of football and it's just random friendlies. Well, this is my winter festival of football, and it's two competitive fixtures and one cash grab. So not all cash grabs. So and I turned 27 during the football festival, which is awesome. So my week's going to roll on, and there'll be stuff on front bench football to get excited about, and this the Women's Asian Cup draw. I've also got to think about that as well. I'm a busy man.
Yeah, and Matt was talking about the AC Milan cash grab, not the Joel Anasmo Korean loan cash grab. So there's that. And also, Matt will hopefully be riding more on Perth Glory this season, provided they don't totally shit the bed in the first game of the year. So let's hope that I actually hope so too. We've spoken about this before, but I, like, even tonight, you're looking at, like, there's actually, like, an active still for, like, all the way throughout the whole, like, 120-plus penalties. I really love the Perth Glory fans, man. Like, it's great. Like, HBF, when you tune in on a Saturday, I'm not even trying to, like, farm for, like, likability from Perth fans. Like, I genuinely enjoy it. Okay, but that'll do for this episode of the Front Page Football Podcast. We will hopefully be back. Might get Jose back on again to do another little Australia Cup review during the week. Matt, you need to say something. You're preparing to say something. What's up?
Cash grab? Well, I didn't see you or Joel on it.
Okay, we really need to finish. All right, I'll probably be back with Jose next week, reviewing more Australia Cup action. I think we've got a few more A-League teams in action next week too, so looking forward to that. But until next time, it's bye for now.